Today on Annenberg Radio News.
What does it take to build affordable housing? It takes nerves of steel.
One local organization makes strides in the fight against homelessness. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, April 16th. I'm Jonathan Horn. A record number of California homes went into foreclosure in March. Nearly 30% more residents received default notices this month compared to last. That's more than 341,000 homeowners who are in danger of losing their homes, according to RealtyTrack. Southern California has been hit particularly hard. The foreclosures are actually good news for some people, though, who are buying up bank-owned homes at record low prices. Home sales also shot up nearly 28% in March. Research company MDA DataQuick reports foreclosure properties made up more than half of home purchases in Southern California last month. But what's good news for some is devastating for others. Home foreclosures have been a serious problem in South Los Angeles. Today, a group of foreclosure victims and activists have gathered in South LA to pressure state and federal governments to suspend evictions. Reporter Caitlin Funero is live at the news conference.
Caitlin? Hi, Jonathan. Hi. Yeah, well, I'm out here off of 63rd Street at the home of Rosa Ariasa. Her home is facing foreclosure, but today she's out here with a group of activists from Acorn, and they're saying that even if the police come to evict her and her family, that they won't leave. The program is called the Home Defense Program, and they're prepared to even be arrested, they say, if it draws more attention to the foreclosure problem.
Caitlin, it is a symbolic gesture at best because it's just one house. What are they trying to tell legislators by doing this?
Well, it's true, and Acorn actually is an organization that does this across the country in different states, but what they really want is they want federal and state governments to give more help to homeowners who are at risk of losing their homes. And even after the temporary moratorium on foreclosures last year, they say it's not enough, and they want the government to actually mandate more mediation between banks and homeowners to make those home loans more affordable. So they can do that by reducing payments, lowering their interest rate. And, you know, we hear a lot about banks that are helping homeowners rework their loans to make them more affordable, but Acorn says that a lot of banks also don't, and that the government should definitely require more help so people like Rosa Ariasa can stay in their homes with their families.
Aaron's Caitlin Funero, live in South Los Angeles. Thank you very much, Caitlin.
Anytime, John.
Today marks the two-year anniversary of the Virginia Tech Massacre, which stands as the worst mass shooting in modern U.S. history. The university held a 3.2-mile race to symbolize the 32 members of the campus community who were killed by Sung-Hui Cho, who also turned the gun on himself. Several of the victims' families and those who were injured in the shooting were among the 4,300 people who returned to the campus for the memorial. LA-based insurance group Farmers Insurance, Inc. announced today it's buying AIG's personal auto group for $1.9 billion. AIG has been in serious financial trouble since it was bailed out by the federal government last year. As of last week, AIG owed taxpayers $45 billion. The sale will make Farmers the third largest personal insurer in the United States and the largest in California. Farmers is a subsidiary of Zurich Financial Services. A group of activists rallied in front of the Mexican consulate in downtown L.A. today to remind President Obama of his promise to tackle immigration reform. Obama landed in Mexico today to meet with Mexican President Felipe Calderon. The talks are expected to focus mainly on drug violence on the U.S.-Mexico border. Juan José Gutierrez is the coordinator of the Latino Movement USA. He says he's glad Obama is paying attention to the problem of gang violence, but that immigration reform should also be at the top of his agenda.
Because everybody realizes that, look, we have a problem, it involves many people, it's time to fix that problem. And so the president needs to understand that the whole country stands to gain for him remaining firm in his commitment that he made to many of us, that during his first year in office, he would make sure that the Congress actually got a comprehensive immigration reform package to begin debating it sometime during his first year.
Mexican leaders have said while drugs are brought north from Mexico to the U.S., the guns used by the cartels are largely trafficked into Mexico from north of the border. President Calderon is pushing Obama to tighten regulations on gun sales. Yeah. Southern California ports won a minor battle earlier today when a federal judge allowed them to continue collecting fees as part of their Clean Trucks program. But the program is still facing a challenge from members of the trucking industry. Esther Pomeroy has more.
The Los Angeles and Long Beach ports are the largest creators of air pollution in Southern California, and the 17,000 heavy-duty trailer trucks bringing cargo to and from the port are largely to blame. The Clean Truck Program would phase out older trucks, which are the biggest polluters, by 2012. Starting next year, the program will also require trucks entering the Port of Los Angeles to belong to companies rather than individuals. The American Trucking Association is protesting this requirement, saying it will unnecessarily hurt individual owner-operators and will instead benefit unions and a few large companies. Jessica Lass of the Natural Resources Defense Council, or NRDC, says restricting port access to these few companies will make the port run more efficiently.
You'd be dealing with a few trucking companies versus thousands of individual drivers. With the LA model, you'd just be working with the trucking companies to ensure that their fleet of trucks that they own would be meeting these standards.
The NRDC is a co-defendant in a lawsuit against the ports filed by the American Trucking Association, or ATA. Clayton Boyce of the ATA says that independent truckers can adapt.
They make a number of false claims, which are that only companies can afford to buy new trucks, only companies can afford to maintain the trucks to keep them burning cleanly. Those just aren't true.
The ATA is also suing both the Port of Los Angeles and the Port of Long Beach for requiring trucking companies to provide details including maintenance, routes, and financial information. A ruling for this lawsuit is due on April 27th. By 2012, under the Clean Truck Program, the ports will no longer allow trucks built before 2007. Esther Pomeroy, Annenberg Radio News.
Tonight's chilly 52-degree evening will give way to 73 degrees and sun tomorrow. Saturday will get even warmer with a high of 79. Later on Annenberg Radio News, there's an election coming up in May. We'll take a closer look at the city attorney's race and the measures that are on the ballot. Downtown Los Angeles is quickly becoming more residential and affluent. A study by the Downtown Property Owners Group finds more people are choosing to live in renovated lofts and condos downtown rather than commute from the suburbs. But it's not just the affluent who are now calling downtown home. More than 100 people also received keys to apartments on Skid Row. Adriana Venegas-Chavez has more on this home for the homeless.
The Abbey Apartments on Skid Row gave keys to more than 113 chronically homeless men and women that hope to change their lives. Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa said this is an important change for the city of Los Angeles. As part of the Skid Row Housing Trust, the Abbey is only one of more than 21 projects in downtown that gives shelter to 1,300 former homeless people. The $28 million project was funded by city, county, and federal money, along with a donation of $1.5 million by private developer Sonia Stani. The Abbey is unique in that it offers in-house health services by John Wesley County Hospital. Jenny Castro, executive assistant of Skid Row Housing Trust, explains.
We provide supportive services for the homeless. Some of the supportive services are like case management, medical services. We try to link the resident to services within the community.
These services are invaluable for people like Richard Smith, a Navy veteran who has been living in the streets of Los Angeles for more than 20 years. For those who have a job, the project offers partially subsidized rent, and for the unemployed, it is fully covered. Debbie Gandy is a resident at the Abbey.
And they go by your income, you know, for your rent. So it's affordable.
Councilmember Jan Perry says it takes a lot of effort to complete a project like the Abbey.
What does it take to build affordable housing? It takes nerves of steel. It takes emotional muscle. It takes beliefs that translate from words into real action.
This project makes a small dent in a big problem. According to the Institute for the Study of the Homeless and Poverty, more than 200,000 homeless people reside in the county of Los Angeles. Adriana Venegas Chavez, Annenberg Radio News.
The runoff campaign to become LA's next city attorney is getting muddy. City Councilman Jack Weiss had some to sling his opponent's way today. Richie Duchon reports.
The issue du jour in the city attorney's race: what clients have the candidates represented in their private legal practices? In a debate last night, attorney Carmen Trutanich refused to reveal his former clients, saying they're protected from being revealed by attorney-client privilege. But here's City Councilman Jack Weiss at a news conference earlier today.
The critical issue now is disclosure. Time and time again, I've called on Carmen Trutanich to disclose the very basics, the identities of his clients. That is not privileged legal information.
Dean of UC Irvine School of Law, Erwin Chemerinsky, who says he's not voting in the runoff election, said only in rare cases would an attorney be legally bound not to disclose former clients.
Only if revealing the identity of clients would in itself of necessity tell something confidential would there be a prohibition of disclosing it.
Why not then reveal former clients? Trutanich campaign consultant John Shellman said they're already public.
Virtually all of Mr. Trutanich's clients are public record. There's court documents. In fact, Councilman Weiss has been pulling those court documents to try to use in a smear campaign against Mr. Trutanich.
Shellman says, in fact, it's Weiss who's not been forthcoming about clients he worked with at the law firm Irell and Manella just out of law school. Chemerinsky says both candidates ought to be as forthcoming as possible with their past dealings.
We may want to choose one person over another for city attorney so as to avoid some kinds of conflicts of interest. If we know that one city attorney would not only disqualify himself, but the whole office because of conflicts of interest, that may be a reason to choose somebody else. So to me, this is an example where the voters just need full information.
The candidates will continue their sparring over this issue, gun control, and the power of the city controller at their next debate April 28th at the National Center for the Preservation of Democracy. Richie Duchon, Annenberg Radio News.
To learn more about what's at stake in the May 19th California special election, I spoke with Bill Whalen. He's a research fellow at the Hoover Institute at Stanford University, which studies public policy. Whalen says everything rests on the outcome of Proposition 1A, which would more than double the state's rainy day backup stabilization fund.
That's the linchpin of the whole thing. If 1A goes down, then the lawmakers in Sacramento have just an enormous mess on their hands because they're going to have to go back to the drawing board in terms of solving the budget deficit, and they're going to come up with billions of dollars, which they currently cannot find.
And what do they mean by rainy day fund?
Rainy day fund means that you create the budget in such a way where you guarantee that a certain portion is set aside. For example, if you got a paycheck and brought home the paycheck and you deposited 5% of that into a savings account, or like a piggy bank where you break it open in case of emergency, the idea in government is a rainy day fund is something that you just set cash aside. You don't tap into it until there is a quote-unquote fiscal crisis.
And a 5% to 12%, that's a really big increase.
It is a big increase, and that's for a couple of reasons. One is they want to show voters that they're serious about doing this. Second, it sends a measure to the bond markets. California is supposed to set aside a certain amount of money each year in every budget. The less it sets aside or the more it sets aside also affects its credit rating.
Now, 1B, the education funding plan, that would only be able to pass if 1A passes. Is that true? What are your thoughts on the feasibility of that?
That's true, and they're linked together, and that's why you see the California Teachers Association putting out radio and TV ads now, which say yes on 1A and yes on 1B. Why are they doing this? They want this deal to go through because they fear the alternative, again, having to go back to the drawing board and coming up with another plan, which if in theory it had to go back and cut more out of government, education would most certainly take a hit.
Are there polls on 1A? Where do you think it'll pass?
I think it is. This whole thing is too close to call, and I figure it this way. There is a very upset portion of this electorate right now. They're upset in part because they just don't like the direction the state's going. They're unhappy with the political ruling class in general. And I think on top of that, they're probably just a little fatigued with politics in the state.
So then what kind of turnout do you think it'll get?
It's not really a quantity turnout, it's a quality turnout. And that we always look at elections and we always say, okay, how many people are going to turn out? But it's not really how many people turn out, it's the right number of people turning out. And that's the trick here for the governor. It's how to get the right batch of people to the polls.
His approval rating is not good, so that could translate to less people coming out because he would want them to. Would you think that?
Well, I think what it translates to is this. In each and every one of those elections that I mentioned, there was one constant as far as Arnold Schwarzenegger was concerned, and that's that Arnold was the star of the show. Campaign ads have featured Arnold going to voters and saying, please do this for me. With his approval ratings down and people down on politicians in general, I don't think it makes a lot of sense for him to be front and center in front of the cameras, or probably most any other politician. And that's why in these early ads you've seen from the CTA, from the Teachers Association, they feature parents, they feature teachers, they feature children. In other words, that the supposed victims of this whole mess, not the politicians who created the problem.
As a speechwriter for Pete Wilson, you kind of work on phrasing them in the right way. Would you say that?
There's a lot to do with nuanced words here. You cannot, you cannot say tax increase. You can say revenue enhancement.
There you go. There you go. Thank you very much for the time.
Okay, take care.
Bill Whalen is a research fellow at the Hoover Institute at Stanford University and was a speechwriter for ex-California Governor Pete Wilson. Los Angeles Philharmonic conductor Esa-Pekka Solonen will conclude his tenure this week. He's conducted 120 premieres in his 17 seasons with the Philharmonic. Solonen's work led works of John Adams, William Craft, as well as many of his own. He has also overseen festivals featuring the works of music of Shostakovich, Beethoven, and Sibelius. Solonen was appointed director of the LA Phil in 1992. Next season, Gustavo Dudamel will take over conducting duties. Someone else retiring is Hall of Fame NFL coach and broadcaster John Madden after 40 years in pro football. Known for his down-to-earth delivery and best-selling video game, Madden recently completed his third season with NBC. His final telecast was Super Bowl 43, really not a bad way to go out. The 73-year-old Madden says he wants to spend more time with his family. Current NBC studio host Chris Collinsworth will be the new color commentator on Sunday Night Football. Now we check in with Skylar Kenny to find out what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Skylar?
Yeah, thanks, John. Tonight, police and DPS are investigating a possible sexual assault at the Lambda Chi fraternity here on campus. We're bringing you the latest from DPS officials. And today marks a two-year anniversary of the tragic student shooting at Virginia Tech. Find out what Virginia Tech is doing to remember the lives that were lost. And after 30 years in the booth, John Madden has officially announced his retirement from broadcasting. All that and more at 6 o'clock on Annenberg TV News.
John Madden, 30 years. It's going to be weird next year without him on NBC. What are you going to miss the most?
It sure will be weird. You know, his love and passion for the game, just watching on TV, you can see it. Of course, the turducken, the halftime making of the turkey. Unbelievable.
I was going to ask you what your favorite catchphrase was. Boom, right?
Boom.
There you go. Thanks, Skylar. Well, if you missed any part of today's show or just want to hear it again, you can find it on the web at www.annenbergradio.org. We also have pictures and stories up on the site, so go check it out. That's it for this Thursday, though. We had help today from Kim Daniels, Ariel Edwards-Levy, and Ryan Nunez. Lata Pandya is our producer, and Caitlin Funero is the executive producer. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Jonathan Horn.